We have been looking at King Josiah. Sorry, the projector just simply won't work. But did earlier today, so I don't know. It just decided to get a little angry or not want to work tonight. But that's where we've been. We took some time to look at Josiah and his reign. And we're going to finish that up in this study and looking at the end of his reign and then moving into a very difficult time period, which begins in about 608 B.C. and then going forward into Babylonian captivity. We have King Jehoaz, who has a very short reign. Jehoiakim, who has about an 11-year reign. Jehoiachin, another very short reign, about 3 months. And then we end with Zedekiah, or his Jewish name would be Mattaniah. His reign ends in about 586. And we'll look at why that is 586 as we move forward. But I do want to go back and look at Jehoiakim and finish that up before we move on. So hopefully you've had a chance to read through these chapters. That'll really help as we move forward and in your own study, just getting into the text. But Josiah, the time frame we're looking at there was 639 608 BC. Now that time is significant when you look at historical writings and when things occurred. So he had about a 30-year reign, 31 years thereabout. So that's where we're going to go. Last week when we were talking, we were looking in 2 Chronicles 34 and 2 Kings 22. Now, it's in the repairing of the temple that the book of the law is found. They're in the walls. They find the book. The book is brought to him. You remember Shaphan brings the book that Hilkiah has found, and then he reads it. His reaction? He began to tear his clothes. He was expressing deep sorrow, mourning, that here are the writings of God, and what are they doing? They're condemning us for what we've done. Now, we just have to look back into history, in the reign of Ammon and Manasseh, how evil, how far from God the nation had become. And so you see his reaction. He has the book read to him. He has this very stark reaction where he begins to tear his clothes. What's his next reaction? Well, that's what they were doing already. But what does he immediately want done? He says, go to, I want you, he gets to his brain trust there. And he says, you go to the prophetess Huldah, and you have her God on my behalf. And she does that. What's God's response to Josiah's concern?
He's still going to bring the devastation that he had already promised, but with Josiah, he would take him to his grave in peace.
Yes, very important. Again, notice the dates. He dies what year? About 608. So just keep that in mind. He dies in about 608. So God says he's not relenting on his punishment, but he's going to delay it just a little while. And there's some world events that kind of are important to all this moving forward. When we get to 2 Chronicles 34, again, we're kind of going between the two. You need to read 2 Chronicles 34 and 35, and then you also need to read 2 Kings 23. But let's look quickly. What were some of the reforms that Josiah did? I noticed how he went through the land. He's already begun to clean it of its idols. As you read on in 2 Chronicles 34, he goes even further. And of all the kings, I don't know if him or Hezekiah, but he goes, I mean, he just completely tries to clean out the land of all the idols. They've stopped at the high places and left them in place. Even Hezekiah did that. I think the text says they worship God at those high places. With Josiah, he doesn't stop. He takes out. He then takes out the priest, these idolatrous priests. He has them killed. He takes the dust from the ground up remains of these idols and he scatters them on the people's graves. Right? And what was it that we know in all of these activities, where is Josiah? He's right there engaged in the moment. He's right there with the people. I won't read all those to you. I do recommend go back and just read those. I mean, the King's writer and also Chronicles, very detailed in everything he did. Let's see. There was one thing I wanted to note here.
Brother Frank, would you mind if I bring out something that I thought was very interesting? In 1 Kings, I looked it up to make sure I had my facts right.
Okay, if you're going to talk about the prophet, hold on just a second. I'm going there. Yeah, that is interesting. And hold on. I know right where you're going, I believe, and I think we're going that way. So hang with me just a minute here. All right, so let's go ahead and go to that text. Let's go to 2 Kings 23. 2 Kings 23, and I'm going to read just a few verses here. So he's going through, and he's doing all of this cleaning. And so he's been cleaning out. The text tells us in verse 15 he went to Bethel, and in Bethel he tore down the high place that had been erected by Jeroboam. It's interesting. He's went even back to the time of Jeroboam. He's just really cleaning everything out. Verse 16, it says, "And as Josiah turned, he saw the tombs there. He sent and took out the bones, took the bones out of the tombs and burned them on the altar and defiled them, according to the word of the Lord that the man of God had proclaimed, who had predicted these things." And so, interesting, the King's author brings that up. Because what's the very next thing that it notes? Verse 17, "Then he, Josiah, said, 'What is that monument that I see?' And the men of the city told him, 'It is the tomb of the man of God who came from Judah and predicted these things that you have done against the altar at Bethel.'" So you may say, okay, I remember something about this. What's he talking about? Well, as our sister was going, let's go to 1 Kings 13. Let's be reminded of this man. 1 Kings 13 is all about him and what he did. And I won't read all of it, but let's just briefly go back and look at who this man was. What you will note from the text, he's never named. He's never given a name, but he's a prophet of God who sent to prophesy against what king? Jeroboam. Jeroboam had just done what? He made what? He made an offering where? You're right. Where?
He set up a monument, a calf or something?
In Bethel. You remember he set up two golden calves in way up. If I can pull the right one here. So he put one way up here in Dan, which is also Laish. And then he also put one in Bethel down here. So you see one on each end. Now he's come in 13, 1 Kings. Can you turn down that gain just a little bit on lapel mic? I'm hearing the reverb. He set up that idol and then came to worship at it. And then it's in that moment that the man of God comes to Jeroboam to prophesy against what he's done. And what happened? Do you remember what happened? Two things happened. Still getting high or something. Sorry about that. Well, you remember the first thing that happens to Jeroboam is he contracts what?
Leprosy.
He contracts leprosy. And then what happens? He's healed. But then what happens to the idol? It breaks in two. Do you remember all that? Does that all sound familiar? So God had sent this young prophet, or this man, I don't know how young he was, I'm assuming he's a young man, to Jeroboam to prophesy what he's doing in Bethel. Because you remember Jeroboam, right after becoming king, he immediately sets up these two idols because he's worried the people in the north are going to go back south and want to make Rehoboam king again. So anyway, that kind of gets us where we are. Now, again, he's not named, but we know later on there's also a second prophet. And again, he's not named, but he tricks. Now, God had given the young man a command. Do you remember what it was? Yeah, and you remember Jeroboam tried to get him to do that, and he said, no, 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 I can't do any of that. I've got to go home. And I can't even go home the same way I came. I've got to go a different way. Well, the young man does what he's supposed to with Jeroboam. However, the old prophet tricked him for some reason, and I still don't know why, tricks him to coming home with him and eating a meal. Eventually, what happens? Just to wrap all this up, you can go back and read it in 1 Kings 13, is God, through the old prophet, tells him, you've disobeyed me. Now you won't go home. You'll not go back and be buried with your own family even. So what happens? He goes out, he gets on his donkey, he tries to go home, and a lion comes out and attacks him. Interestingly enough, the old prophet, maybe out of feelings of guilt or whatever it is, goes and finds the young man's body. He then brings the young man back. He buries him. He says, I want to be buried with him. That's what we're reading about in 2 Kings 23. And now this monument has been a prophet. You also notice this is the one tomb that Josiah says, don't go and bother it. Leave it alone. Let it stand. All the other false prophets, he has them take their bones out, burn them again. What does all that represent to you? Why does Josiah do that? And what does that monument represent? I may not be asking that the best way. And God expects it out of everybody. And he's not giving leeway when he tells you something directly to do it. Here's a prophet of God who came to prophesy, did what God wanted him to do, and yet even that man, when he disobeyed God's direct command, what happened to him? I think he stands as a monument to God expects us to do what he asks us to do. There's no leeway in that. And so when you come back to 2 Kings 23, he says, leave it alone. And they continue their work. Verse 19, 2 Kings 23:19. Josiah removed all the shrines, also high places that were in the area the king of Israel had made, provoking the Lord to anger. I think it's interesting that Josiah's kingdom exists where? In Judah, yet he's up here. He didn't just work on Judah, but he even worked up here. What's also interesting, remember what's happened up here. They've been exiled, and then they've been replaced with people of other nations. And yet he felt the great desire to do that. He is cleansing Judah, but all of it, and working to that end. It says he sacrificed, verse 20, all the priests of the high places who were there on the altars and burned human bones on them. Then he kind of a statement of the end of this work. So he just really thoroughly goes through and he just cleanses all of this idolatry out and reforms it. If you continue reading, he does all of that. He then restores the Passover. What, there's a statement that made that's very interesting to me. If I can find it here real quick. What does that one say? Yeah, thank you. Verse 22, 2 Kings 23, 22. For no such Passover had been kept since the days of the judges who judged Israel. Statement there in and of itself, isn't it? He said there have been no one has so observed the Passover as the judges. That includes David. He's going all the way back to the time of Judges. Now, why is the Passover so important? Why include that? Absolutely. And in a way, the reign of Josiah is almost a Passover. God had already told them, you're going into captivity. I'm going to punish you. But Josiah's reign represents a God putting that off. I'm going to push it back. Because of Josiah, I'm going to relent for a while. Now, that won't last long after he dies. But this Passover was really symbolic of who the Israelites were. God chose them from all the peoples of the earth to be his special family. And to think, it's been since the time of Judges that they have held such a Passover. It really does say something about the moral decline of the nation itself. I like this statement. If you go down to 25, in summarizing Josiah's life, it says, before him there was no king like him who turned to the Lord with all his heart, with all his soul, with all his might, according to all the law of Moses. Nor did any like him arise after him. I mean, what a statement to be made. No king like him. That includes David, doesn't it? I mean, Josiah really does stand out. Obedience and his faithfulness. And when he says he turned with all his heart, with all his soul, with all his might. You know, sometimes I'll give you this, I'll give you that, but I got to have this. You ever bargain with God? You ever done that? I mean, it's a human temptation. He says he didn't do that. Josiah didn't bargain with God. He gave him all. Maybe something we can learn from that, isn't it? Are there areas in our life where we're bargaining with God? Where we're not really giving him everything? I don't think that exactly makes God super happy. Verse 26, and this is really a statement for the rest of the time. Still, despite how good Josiah was, still the Lord did not turn from the burning of his great wrath, by which his anger was kindled against Judah, because of all the provocations with which Manasseh had provoked him. And Manasseh, he even repented, but God still had a righteous indignation to what had happened. The Lord said, I will remove Judah also out of my sight as I have removed Israel, and I will cast off this city that I have chosen in Jerusalem, Jerusalem in the house there. And so I believe that that is pointing toward the temple. And we're going to see why that's significant as you get to the end of their time before the captivity. And so God says that's going to happen. Now, I just real briefly want to talk about the death of Josiah. I'm fascinated by it. I don't really have all the answers to why he chose what he did. But if you go to 2 Kings 23 and you need to combine that with 2 Chronicles 35, you get a real kind of full picture. Now, at the time in the world, you had, what was the major power at the time? This is a little tricky. It's a little tricky. Not be what you think it is. What's the world power at the time? No. All right. Now, we'll get into some time stuff in just a minute. We'll talk about some world events. But Egypt was a really powerful. I don't know who the most powerful was, because at the time Babylon was coming up and Assyria was going down. So you've got a real transition. Things in turmoil. Now at the time, Pharaoh Necho was in charge of Egypt. And he was at war with who? He was at war with. Let's read it. It says, in the days, 2 Kings 23:29. Now notice this. In the days of Pharaoh Necho, king of Egypt, went up to the king of Assyria to the river Euphrates. So going to war, that's a very polite way of saying they're going to battle. Pharaoh Necho is challenging Assyria. Now why is he doing that? Well, Babylonians have just dealt a fatal blow to the Assyrians. In 612, the Babylonians come up again. Well, Assyria is wounded. Well, I believe, my opinion is, Pharaoh Necho thought, this is my chance. And he decides he's going to go to war with Assyria. Josiah, he's king too, right? He has a nation. I don't really know what his full intention was, but he decides he's going to. Now, Pharaoh Necho tries to warn him. They go to a place called Megiddo. Interesting thing. Can I find Megiddo? Let's see. Yeah, it's right here, but I don't see. It's on one of these, I know. Let's see. Cool tie-in. Ah, Megiddo. There it is. You see Megiddo here. What name Megiddo mean in your mind? I love this. This is so neat. What now? Okay. So Megiddo was, there was a mount. In the book of Revelation, he talks about arm referring to the mount of Megiddo. So in the battle of Armageddon, what he's talking about, he's using an Old Testament illustration to illustrate a Christian warfare. And that's the study of Revelation. We can talk about it later. There's not going to be a battle of Armageddon in that sense, not in the premillennial sense. But Megiddo is where all that centered on. So you think about Armageddon, Megiddo. Megiddo is a famous place because a lot battles have taken place here. It's important. It's an important place because of the road that ran through here. It was a high ground. It was very important militarily to take Megiddo. And so that's where they're going to battle. And so you have them come to war. Josiah decides he needs to get involved in this. Let's see. In verse 20, 35, Pharaoh names Josiah. Something interesting. He says, I'm not coming against you this day. This was Necho talking to Josiah. It's the house with which I am at war, which was Assyria. And God has commanded me to hurry. See, suppose God is with me, lest he destroy you. Again, careful here. This is Necho talking, saying that he necessarily has God, he's God, but at least he believes God is behind this. I find that interesting. What does Josiah do? Does he go home? No, he doesn't. Interesting to me. What he does? Go down to. I did not turn away from him, but him, the words of Necho, from the mouth of God. The writer indicate what? That he was speaking the truth. He really was a mission from God to fight against the Assyrians. He did not listen, but to fight in and the archers, and the king said to his servants, take me away. They take him back to tombs, the reign of Josiah. To me, I'm perplexed by visions there. I don't know. But there may be a no. He's killed in battle, and so man whose life kind of comes to an end, kind of on a down note. And it's a down note for the children of Israel. I do want to note before I you have verse 25. I want to read this about Josiah. Jeremiah meant for Josiah. And I tried to look that up, but I didn't see that in any of the Lamentations. But if anybody knows where that is, I'd love to read it. And all the singing men and singing women have spoken of Josiah in their laments to this day. They made these a rule in Israel. Behold, they are written in the laments. And so I think says a lot and who he was, and songs and poems were made about him and his life and the good that he did. Any questions about Josiah? Yes, ma'am. So during the time of Josiah, you would have had Zephaniah, Nahum, Jeremiah. They were all contemporary prophets. Now, as far as the Bible doesn't really like talk a lot about their communication with him, as far as I know, except for maybe some mentions in Jeremiah. Yeah, exactly, and I think that's a big question. That's why I'm perplexed why he didn't go to Jeremiah. Why didn't he even go to Huldah, right, and ask God, what do you want me to do? We get into trouble when we don't consult God. No, I mean, he seemed to kind of... If I say this in a nice way, he'd stick his nose in something he didn't really, seemingly didn't have a place in. But maybe he felt he had one. But again, you don't read anywhere in there of him consulting God for his guidance. And I think that's the big problem. Yes. Yeah, they would have had to come up through... Lakish and on north. Yeah. And it could even been just a pride thing. You're coming into my land without permission. I don't know, but in any of that, we're speculating. But it kind of doesn't make sense unless it's something like that. Have seen oh even as his, right? Because that's still in the north. And at the time, you've had this turning over of world powers with Assyria being weakened, and with Babylon becoming stronger. It was a time countries during those times. He was right there. And he definitely was making returns toward that with his going through the land and even cleaning out Samaria of its idols. But, you know, it's really a turning point for Judah in a negative way. Josiah's done all, and now he's gone. So what happens? I'm going to go through this, not very long, but we'll just have just a little bit left tomorrow or next week. But the text tells us in verse 31 of 2 Kings 23, so 1, Jehoaz was 23 years old when he began to reign. He reigned for 3 months, or reigned 3 months in Jerusalem. I don't have that one up. But on my nice chart that I he's of three sons that are mentioned here who are going to be king of Josiah. So he's one of the three sons that the text on to tell us that verse 32, so his father, he did to say, he turned it on his head. He did what was evil in the sight of the Lord according to all that his father, but all you get that kind of marker, right? You think you're 3 months into your reign, I'd have a little bit of time here just to get adjusted, but it's not. Now, something interesting that does happen that I want to note real quickly. Verse 33. Now, remember, Simon got involved in a war that he shouldn't have been involved in. Well, what does that do? Well, 33 tells us that Pharaoh Necho put his son Jehoaz, in bonds at Riblah in the land of Hamath, that he might not reign in Jerusalem, laid on the land a tribute or a tax of 100 talents of silver and a talent of gold. And so Pharaoh Necho uses this opportunity of this shift, maybe as a way to get back at Josiah, maybe it's just himself seeing, hey, this Judah's in turmoil, they're just lost king in battle, it's my chance to get in there and take some control. And he does that. Now, we see that with the tax he laid on Judah, which, does he have a right to do that? He didn't have the right. It's not his people. But he does by force of will. And he wants to put in his man. I'm going to go kind of quickly through. He then decides or to do what? 2 Kings. You're not going to be king. We're going to arrest you, take you back. But I'm going to put your brother, Eliakim, in place of you. And the text tells us, at the end of verse 34, he took Jehoaz back to Egypt, and there he died. It gets us into Jehoiakim, who then begins to reign in 608. These are important dates. Now, remember what I said before. What happened in 612? Babylon and Syria have their big fight. Babylon comes out the winner. All right, we're at 608. Just keep that. Jehoiakim becomes king. Now, Jehoiakim, his name was Eliakim. The Egyptians decide, nah, we're going to call you Jehoiakim. They rename him. They put the text tells us in verse 6, he was 25 when he began to reign. He reigned 11 years. Now, again, he is another. So he put the first son, Jehoaz, did. Named to Jehoiakim. Now notice what it says about him. Verse 37. Again, not the mark of a righteous king, but it says he did what was evil in the sight of the Lord according to all that his fathers had done. Again, the same statement made about Jehoiakim. And then verse 30. I want to note this. So verse 35 says, Jehoiakim gave the silver and gold to Pharaoh. And so what was the first thing they did after they came in and took out Jehoaz? They put a tax on the land. Well, Jehoiakim, when he was put into place, upheld that tax and went beyond it. He taxed the land to give the money according to the command of Pharaoh. He exacted the silver and the gold of the people of the land from everyone according to his assessment to give it to Pharaoh. So, puts their man in place, and then they begin to receive taxes from him. So, next week, we'll finish all this out. We'll kind of put a bow on our study as we end this out. In the coming weeks, we're going to start a new study on challenges that the church faces or attacks that we face. And we'll begin looking at that in a couple of weeks. So again, thank you all so much. Be dismissed and rejoin shortly for our devotional time.